Muriel, fear not, but that she will love you now Valentine is banished from her sight.
But since his exile, she'll despise me most, forsworn my company and railed at me that I'm desperate of obtaining her.
This weak, impressive love is as a figure trenched in ice, which with an hour's heat dissolves to water and thus loses form. A little time will melt her frozen thoughts, and worthless Valentine shall be forgotten. How now, Sir Proteus? Is your countryman, according to our proclamation, gone?
Gone, my good lord.
My daughter takes his going grievously.
A little time, my lord, will kill that grief.
So I believe, but Furio thinks not so. Proteus, the good conceit I hold of thee, for I have shown some sign of good desert, makes thee the better to confer with thee.
Longer than I may prove loyal to your grace, let me not live to look upon your grace.
Thou knowest how willingly I would affect the match between Sir Thurio and my daughter.
I do, my lord.
Also, I think thou art not ignorant how she opposes her against my will.
She did, my lord, when Valentine was here.
Aye, but perversely she persevers, sir. What might we do to make the girl forget the love of Valentine and love Sir Thurio?
The best way is to slander Valentine with falsehood, cowardice, and poor descent. Three things that women highly hold in hate.
Aye, but she'll think that it is spoken hate.
Aye, if his enemy deliver it. And therefore it must, with circumstance, be spoken by one whom she esteemeth as his friend.
Then you must undertake to slander him.
That, my lord, I shall be very loath to do. It is an ill office for a gentleman, especially against his very friend.
Your good word cannot advantage him. Your slander never can endanger him. Therefore, the office is indifferent, being entreated to it by your friend.
You have prevailed, my lord. If I can do it by aught that I can speak in his dispraise, she shall not long continue love to him. But say this winds her love from Valentine, it follows not that she will love Sir Thurio.
Therefore, as you unwind her love from him, lest it should ravel and prove good to none, you must contrive to bottom it on me, which must be done by praising me as much as you in words dispraise Sir Valentine.
And Proteus, we dare trust you in this kind, because we know on Valentine's report you are already love's firm votary and cannot soon revolt and change your mind. Upon this warrant shall you have access, where you with Sylvia may confer at large, for she is lumpish, heavy, melancholy. And for your friend's sake, will be glad of you. Where you may temper her by your persuasion to hate young Valentine and love my friend.
As much as I can do, I will effect. But you, Cytherea, you are not sharp enough. You must lay lime to tangle her desires with wailful sonnets whose composed rhyme should be full fraught with serviceable vows.
Aye, much is the force of heaven-bred poesy.
Say that upon the altar of her beauty, you sacrifice your tears, your sighs, your heart. Write till your ink be dry, and with your tears moist it again to frame some feeling line that may discover such integrity. For Orpheus' lute was strung with poet's sinews, whose golden touch could soften steel and stones, make tigers tame, and huge leviathans forsake unsounded deeps to dance on sand. After your dire lamenting elegy, visit by night your lady's chamber window with some sweet consort, to their instruments tune a deploring dump. The night's dead silence will well become such sweet complaining grievance. This or else nothing will inherit her.
This discipline shows that thou hast been in love.
And my advice this night I'll put in practice. Therefore, sweet Proteus, my direction giver, let us into the city presently to sort some gentleman well skilled in music.
Yes, I have a sonnet that will serve the turn to give the onset to my good advice.
About it, gentlemen. We'll wait upon your grace till after supper, and afterward determine our proceedings.
Even now, about it. I will pardon you.